Even as Ender learned how much he did not know, he also saw things that he could improve on. The well-rehearsed formations were a mistake. It allowed the soldiers to obey shouted orders instantly, but it also meant they were predictable. Also, the individual soldiers were given little initiative. Once a pattern was set, they were to follow it through. There was no room for adjustment to what the enemy did against the formation. Ender studied Bonzo's formations like an enemy commander would, noting ways to disrupt the formation. During free play that night, Ender asked Petra to practice with him. "No," she said. "I want to be a commander someday, so I've got to play the game room." It was a common belief that the teachers monitored the games and spotted potential commanders there. Ender doubted it, though. Toon leaders had a better chance to show what they might do as commanders than any video player. But he didn't argue with Petra. The after-breakfast practice was generous enough. Still, he had to practice, and he couldn't practice alone, except a few of the basic skills. Most of the hard things required partners or teams. If only he still had Alai or Shen to practice with. Well, why shouldn't he practice with them? He had never heard of a soldier practicing with Launchies, but there was no rule against it. It just wasn't done. Launchies were held in too much contempt. Well, Ender was still being treated like a Launchie anyway. He needed someone to practice with, and in return he could help them learn some of the things he saw the older boys doing. "Ay, the great soldier returns," said Barnard. Ender stood in the doorway of his old barracks. He'd only been away for a day, but already it seemed like an alien place, and the others of his launch group were strangers. Almost he turned around and left. But there was Alai, who had made their friendship sacred. Alai was not a stranger. Ender made no effort to conceal how he was treated in Salamander Army. "And they're right, I'm about as useful as a sneeze in a spacesuit." Alai laughed, and other launchies started to gather around. Ender proposed his bargain. Free play every day, working hard in the battle room, under Ender's direction. They would learn things from the armies, from the battles Ender would see. He would get the practice he needed in developing soldier skills. "We'll get ready together." A lot of the boys wanted to come, too. "Sure," Ender said. "If you're coming to work, if you're just farting around, you're out. I don't have any time to waste." They didn't waste any time. Ender was clumsy, trying to describe what he had seen, working out ways to do it, but by the time free play ended, they had learned some things. They were tired, but they were getting the knack of a few techniques. "Where were you?" said Bonzo. Ender stood stiffly by his commander's bunk. "Practicing in a battle room. I hear you had some of your old launchy group with you." "I couldn't practice alone. I won't have any soldiers in Salamander Army hanging around with launchies. You're a soldier now." Ender regarded him in silence. "Did you hear me, Wigan?"
"Yes, sir."
"No more practicing with those little farts." "May I speak to you privately?" asked Ender. It was a request that commanders were required to allow. Bonzo's face went angry, and he led Ender out into the corridor. "Listen, Wigan. I don't want you. I'm trying to get rid of you, but don't give me any problems or I'll paste you to the wall." A good commander, thought Ender, doesn't have to make stupid threats. Bonzo grew annoyed at Ender's silence. "Look, you asked me to come out here. Now talk." "Sir, you were correct not to place me in a toon. I don't know how to do anything. I don't need you to tell me when I'm correct. But I'm going to become a good soldier. I won't screw up your regular drill, but I'm going to practice. And I'm going to practice with the only people who will practice with me, and that's my launchies. You'll do what I tell you, you little bastard."
"That's right, sir. I'll follow all the orders that you're authorized to give. But free play is free. No assignments can be given, none, by anyone."
He could see Bonzo's anger growing hot. Hot anger was bad. Ender's anger was cold, and he could use it. Bonzo's was hot, and so it used him.
"Sir, I've got my own career to think of. I won't interfere in your training and your battles, but I've got to learn sometime. I didn't ask to be put into your army. You're trying to trade me as soon as you can. But nobody will take me if I don't know anything, will they? Let me learn something, and then you can get rid of me all the sooner and get a soldier you can really use." Bonzo was not such a fool that anger kept him from recognizing good sense when he heard it. Still, he couldn't let go of his anger immediately. While you're in Salamander Army, you'll obey me. If you try to control my free play, I can get you iced. It probably wasn't true, but it was possible. Certainly, if Ender made a fuss about it, interfering with free play could conceivably get Bonzo removed from command. Also, there was the fact that the officers obviously saw something in Ender, since they had promoted him. Maybe Ender did have influence enough with the teachers to ice somebody. Bastard, said Bonzo. It isn't my fault you gave me that order in front of everybody, Ender said. But if you want, I'll pretend you won this argument. Then tomorrow, you can tell me you changed your mind. I don't need you to tell me what to do. I don't want the other guys to think you back down. You wouldn't be able to command as well. Bonzo hated him for it, for the kindness. Ender tried to understand why. Maybe it seemed to Bonzo as if Ender were granting him his command as a favor. Galling, and yet he had no choice, no choice about anything. Well, it was Bonzo's own fault for giving Ender an unreasonable order. Still, he would only know that Ender had beaten him, and then rubbed his nose in it by being magnanimous. I'll have your ass someday, Bonzo said. Probably, said Ender. The lights out buzzer sounded. Ender walked back into the room looking dejected, beaten, angry. The other boys drew the obvious conclusion. And in the morning, as Ender was leaving for breakfast, Bonzo stopped him and spoke loudly. I changed my mind, pinprick. Maybe by practicing with your launchies you'll learn something, and I can trade you easier. Anything to get rid of you faster. Thank you, sir, Ender said. Anything, whispered Bonzo. I hope you're iced. Ender smiled gratefully and left the room. After breakfast, he practiced again with Petra. All afternoon, he watched Bonzo drill and figured out ways to destroy his army. During free play, he and Alai and the others worked themselves to exhaustion. I can do this, thought Ender as he lay in his bed, his muscles throbbing, unknotting themselves. I can handle it. Salamander Army had a battle 4 days later. Ender followed behind the real soldiers as they jogged along the corridors to the battle room. There were two ribbons along the walls, the green-green-brown of Salamander and the black-white-black of Condor. When they came to the place where the battle room had always been, the corridor split instead, with green-green-brown leading to the left and black-white-black to the right. Around another turn to the right, and the army stopped in front of a blank wall. The toons formed up in silence. Ender stayed behind them all. Bonzo was giving his instructions. A, take the handles and go up. B, left. C, right. D, down. He saw that the toons were oriented to follow instructions, then added, And you, Pinprick, wait 4 minutes, then come just inside the door. Don't even take your gun off your suit. Ender nodded. Suddenly, the wall behind Bonzo became transparent. Not a wall at all, then, but a force field. The battle room was different, too. Huge brown boxes were suspended in midair, partially obstructing the view. So these were the obstacles that the soldiers called stars. They were distributed seemingly at random. Bonzo seemed not to care where they were. Apparently, the soldiers already knew how to handle the stars. But it soon became clear to Ender, as he sat and watched the battle from the corridor, that they did not know how to handle the stars. They did know how to soft land on one and use it for cover, the tactics of assaulting the enemy's position on a star. They showed no sense at all of which stars mattered. They persisted in assaulting stars that could have been bypassed by wall sliding to a more advanced position. The other commander was taking advantage of Bonzo's neglect of strategy. Condor Army forced the Salamanders into costly assaults. Fewer and fewer Salamanders were unfrozen for the attack on the next star. It was clear after only 4 minutes that Salamander Army could not defeat the enemy by attacking. Ender stepped through the gate. He drifted slightly downward. The battle rooms he had practiced in always had their doors at floor level. For real battles, however, the door was set in the middle of the wall, as far from the floor as from the ceiling. Abruptly, he felt himself reorient, as he had in the shuttle. What had been down was now up and now sideways.
In Nullo, there was no reason to stay oriented the way he had been in the corridor. It was impossible to tell, looking at the perfectly square doors, which way had been up, and it didn't matter. For now, Ender had found the orientation that made sense. The enemy's gate was down. The object of the game was to fall toward the enemy's home. Ender made the motions that oriented himself in his new direction. Instead of being spread out, his whole body presented to the enemy, now Ender's legs pointed toward them. He was a much smaller target. Someone saw him. He was, after all, drifting aimlessly in the open. Instinctively, he pulled his legs up under him. At that moment, he was flashed, and the legs of his suit froze in position. His arms remained unfrozen. For without a direct body hit, only the limbs that were shot froze up. It occurred to Ender that if he had not been presenting his legs to the enemy, it would have been his body they hit. He would have been immobilized. Since Bonzo had ordered him not to draw his weapon, Ender continued to drift, not moving his head or arms, as if they had been frozen too. The enemy ignored him and concentrated their fire on the soldiers who were firing at them. It was a bitter battle. Outnumbered now, Salamander Army gave ground stubbornly. The battle disintegrated into a dozen individual shootouts. Bonzo's discipline paid off now, for each salamander that froze took at least one enemy with him. No one ran or panicked. Everyone remained calm and aimed carefully. Petra was especially deadly. Condor Army noticed it and took great effort to freeze her. They froze her shooting arm first, and her stream of curses was only interrupted when they froze her completely and the helmet clamped down on her jaw. In a few minutes, it was over. Salamander Army offered no more resistance. Ender noted with pleasure that Condor could only muster the minimal 5 soldiers necessary to open the gate to victory. 4 of them touched their helmets to the lighted spots at the 4 corners of Salamander's door, while the 5th passed through the force field. That ended the game. The lights came back on to their full brightness, and Anderson came out of the teacher door. "I could have drawn my gun and shot just one of them, and they would have been too few. The game would have been a draw. Without 4 men to touch the 4 corners and a 5th man to pass through the gate, Condor would have had no victory." "Bonzo, you ass. I could have saved you from this defeat. Maybe even turned it to victory, since they were sitting there, easy targets. They wouldn't have known at first where the shots were coming from. I'm a good enough shot for that." But orders were orders, and Ender had promised to obey. He did get some satisfaction out of the fact that on the official tally, Salamander Army recorded not the expected 41 disabled or eliminated, but rather 40 eliminated and 1 damaged. Bonzo couldn't understand it until he consulted Anderson's book and realized who it was. "I was only damaged, Bonzo," thought Ender. "I could still shoot." He expected Bonzo to come to him and say, "Next time when it's like that, you can shoot," but Bonzo didn't say anything to him at all until the next morning after breakfast. Of course, Bonzo ate in the commander's mess, but Ender was pretty sure the odd score would cause as much stir there as it did in the soldiers' dining hall. In every other game that wasn't a draw, every member of the losing team was either eliminated, totally frozen, or disabled, which meant they had some body parts still unfrozen but were unable to shoot or inflict damage on the enemy. Salamander was the only losing army with 1 man in the damaged but active category. Ender volunteered no explanation. But the other members of Salamander Army let it be known why it had happened, and when other boys asked him why he hadn't disobeyed orders and fired, he calmly answered, "I obey orders." After breakfast, Bonzo looked for him. "The order still stands," he said, "and don't you forget it." "It will cost you, you fool. I may not be a good soldier, but I can still help, and there's no reason you shouldn't let me." Ender said nothing. An interesting side effect of the battle was that Ender emerged at the top of the soldier efficiency list. Since he hadn't fired a shot, he had a perfect record on shooting, no misses at all, and since he had never been eliminated or disabled, his percentage there was excellent. No one else came close. It made a lot of the boys laugh, and others were angry, but on the prized efficiency list, Ender was now the leader. He kept sitting out the army practice sessions and kept working hard on his own with Petra in the mornings and his friends at night. More launchees were joining them now, not on a lark, but because they could see results. They were getting better and better. Ender and Alai stayed ahead of them, though. In part, it was because Alai kept trying new things, which forced Ender to think of new tactics to cope with them. In part, it was because they kept making stupid mistakes, which suggested things to do that no self-respecting, well-trained soldier would even have tried. Many of the things they attempted turned out to be useless, but it was always fun, always exciting, and enough things worked that they knew it was helping them. Evening was the best time of day. The next two battles were easy salamander victories. Ender came in after 4 minutes and remained untouched by the defeated enemy. Ender began to realize that Condor army, which had beaten them, was unusually good. Salamander, weak as Bonzo's grasp of strategy might be, was one of the better teams, climbing steadily in the ratings, clawing for fourth place with Rat Army. Ender turned 7. They weren't much for dates and calendars at the battle school, but Ender had found out how to bring up the date on his desk, and he noticed his birthday. The school noticed it, too. They took his measurements and issued him a new salamander uniform and a new flash suit for the battle room. He went back to the barracks with the new clothing on. It felt strange and loose, like his skin no longer fit properly. He wanted to stop at Petra's bunk and tell her about his home, about what his birthdays were usually like, just tell her it was his birthday so she'd say something about it being a happy one. But nobody told birthdays. It was childish. It was what landsiders did, cakes and silly customs. Valentine baked him his cake on his 6th birthday. It fell, and it was terrible. Nobody knew how to cook anymore. It was the kind of crazy thing Valentine would do. Everybody teased Valentine about it, but Ender saved a little bit of it in his cupboard. Then they took out his monitor, and he left. And for all he knew, it was still there, a little piece of greasy yellow dust. Nobody talked about home, not among the soldiers. There had been no life before battle school. Nobody got letters, and nobody wrote any. Everybody pretended that they didn't care. But I do care, thought Ender. The only reason I'm here is so that a bugger won't shoot out Valentine's eye, won't blast her head open like the soldiers in the videos of the first battles with the buggers, won't split her head with a beam so hot that her brains burst the skull and spill out like rising bread dough, the way it happens in my worst nightmares and my worst nights when I wake up trembling but silent, must keep silent or they'll hear that I miss my family. I want to go home. It was better in the morning. Home was merely a dull ache in the back of his memory, a tiredness in his eyes. That morning Bonzo came in as they were dressing. Flash suits, he called. It was a battle. Ender's 4th game. The enemy was Leopard Army. It would be easy. Leopard was new, and it was always in the bottom quarter in the standings. It had been organized only 6 months ago, with Paul Slattery as its commander. Ender put on his new battle suit and got into line. Bonzo pulled him roughly out of line and made him march at the end. You didn't need to do that, Ender said silently. You could have let me stay in line. Ender watched from the corridor. Paul Slattery was young, but he was sharp. He had some new ideas. He kept his soldiers moving, darting from star to star, wall sliding to get behind and above the stolid salamanders. Ender smiled. Bonzo was hopelessly confused, and so were his men. Leopard seemed to have men in every direction. However, the battle was not as lopsided as it seemed. Ender noticed that Leopard was losing a lot of men, too. Their reckless tactics exposed them too much. What mattered, however, was that Salamander felt defeated. They had surrendered the initiative completely. Though they were still fairly evenly matched with the enemy, they huddled together like the last survivors of a massacre, as if they hoped the enemy would overlook them in the carnage. Ender slipped slowly through the gate, oriented himself so the enemy's gate was down, and drifted slowly eastward to a corner where he wouldn't be noticed. He even fired at his own legs to hold them in the kneeling position that offered him the best protection. He looked to any casual glance like another frozen soldier who had drifted helplessly out of the battle. With Salamander Army waiting abjectly for destruction, Leopard obligingly destroyed them. When Salamander finally stopped firing, Leopard had 9 boys left.
They formed up and started to open the salamander gate. Ender aimed carefully with a straight arm, as Petra had taught him. Before anyone knew what was happening, he froze three of the soldiers who were about to press their helmets against the lighted corners of the door. Then some of the others spotted him and fired, but at first they hit only his already frozen legs. It gave him time to get the last two men at the gate. Leopard had only four men left unfrozen when Ender was finally hit in the arm and disabled. The game was a draw, and they never had hit him in the body. Paul Slattery was furious, but there had been nothing unfair about it. Everyone in Leopard Army assumed that it had been a strategy of Bonzo's to leave a man till the last minute. It didn't occur to them that little Ender had fired against orders. But Salamander Army knew. Bonzo knew. And Ender could see from the way his commander looked at him that Bonzo hated him for rescuing him from total defeat. "I don't care," Ender told himself. "It will just make me easier to trade away, and in the meantime, you won't drop so far in the standings. Just trade me. I've learned all I'm ever going to learn from you. How to fail with style. That's all you know, Bonzo. What have I learned so far?" Ender listed things in his mind as he undressed by his bunk. "The enemy's gate is down. Use my legs as a shield in battle. A small reserve held back until the end of the game can be decisive. And soldiers can sometimes make decisions that are smarter than the orders they've been given." Naked, he was about to climb into bed when Bonzo came toward him, his face hard and set. "I have seen Peter like this," thought Ender, silent with murder in his eye. "But Bonzo is not Peter. Bonzo has more fear." "Wigan, I finally traded you. I was able to persuade Rat Army that your incredible place on the efficiency list is more than an accident. You go over there tomorrow." "Thank you, sir," Ender said. Perhaps he sounded too grateful. Suddenly, Bonzo swung at him, caught his jaw with a vicious, open-handed slap. It knocked Ender sideways into his bunk, and he almost fell. Then Bonzo slugged him hard in the stomach. Ender dropped to his knees. "You disobeyed me," Bonzo said, loudly for all to hear. "No good soldier ever disobeys." Even as he cried from the pain, Ender could not help but take vengeful pleasure in the murmurs he heard rising through the barracks. "You fool, Bonzo. You aren't enforcing discipline, you're destroying it. They know I turned defeat into a draw, and now they see how you repay me. You made yourself look stupid in front of everyone. What is your discipline worth now?" The next day, Ender told Petra that for her sake the shooting practice in the morning would have to end. Bonzo didn't need anything that looked like a challenge now, and so she'd better stay clear of Ender for a while. She understood perfectly. "Besides," she said, "you're as close to being a good shot as you'll ever be." He left his desk and flash suit in the locker. He would wear his salamander uniform until he could get to the commissary and change it for the brown and black of Rat. He had brought no possessions with him. He would take none away. There were none to have. Everything of value was in the school computer or his own head and hands. He used one of the public desks in the game room to register for an Earth Gravity personal combat course during the hour immediately after breakfast. He didn't plan to get vengeance on Bonzo for hitting him, but he did intend that no one would be able to do that to him again.
Colonel Graff, the games have always been run fairly before, either random distribution of stars or symmetrical.
Fairness is a wonderful attribute, Major Anderson. It has nothing to do with war.
The game will be compromised. The comparative standings will become meaningless.
Alas.
It will take months, years, to develop the new battle rooms and run the simulations.
That's why I'm asking you now. To begin, be creative. Think of every stacked, impossible, unfair star arrangement you can. Think of other ways to bend the rules. Late notification, unequal forces. Then run the simulations and see which ones are hardest, which easiest. We want an intelligent progression here. We want to bring him along.
When do you plan to make him a commander? When he's 8?
Of course not. I haven't assembled his army yet.
Oh, so you're stacking it that way too?
You're getting too close to the game, Anderson. You're forgetting that it is merely a training exercise.
It's also status, identity, purpose, name. All that makes these children who they are comes out of this game. When it becomes known that the game can be manipulated, weighted, cheated, it will undo this whole school. I'm not exaggerating.
I know.
So I hope Ender Wiggin truly is the one, because you'll have degraded the effectiveness of our training method for a long time to come.
If Ender isn't the one, if his peak of military brilliance does not coincide with the arrival of our fleet at the Bugger homeworlds, then it doesn't really matter what our training method is or isn't.
I hope you will forgive me, Colonel Graf, but I feel that I must report your orders and my opinion of their consequences to the strategos and the hegemon.
Why not our dear Polemarch?
Everybody knows you have him in your pocket.
Such hostility, Major Anderson. And I thought we were friends.
We are. And I think you may be right about Ender. I just don't believe you and you alone should decide the fate of the world.
I don't even think it's right for me to decide the fate of Ender Wiggin.
So you won't mind if I notify them?
Of course I mind, you meddlesome ass. This is something to be decided by people who know what they're doing, not these frightened politicians who got their office because they happen to be politically potent in the country they come from.
But you understand why I'm doing it.
Because you're such a short-sighted little bureaucratic bastard that you think you need to cover yourself in case things go wrong. Well, if things go wrong, we'll all be bugger meat. So trust me now, Anderson, and don't bring the whole damn hegemony down on my neck. What I'm doing is hard enough without them.
Oh, is it unfair? Are things stacked against you? You can do it to Ender, but you can't take it. Is that it?
Ender Wiggin is 10 times smarter and stronger than I am. What I'm doing to him will bring out his genius. If I had to go through it myself, it would crush me. Major Anderson, I know I'm wrecking the game, and I know you love it better than any of the boys who play. Hate me if you like, but don't stop me.
I reserve the right to communicate with the hegemony and the strategoi at any time. But for now, do what you want.
Thank you so very kindly.
Ender Wiggin, the little farthead who leads the standings. What a pleasure to have you with us. The commander of Rat Army lay sprawled on the lower bunk wearing only his desk. With you around, how can any army lose? Several of the boys nearby laughed. There could have not been two more opposite armies than Salamander and Rat. The room was rumpled, cluttered, noisy. After Bonzo, Ender had thought that undiscipline would be a welcome relief. Instead, he found that he had come to expect quiet and order, and the disorder here made him uncomfortable.
We doing okay, Ender Benda. I rose the nose, Jew boy extraordinaire, and you ain't nothing but a pinhead pinprick of a goy. Don't you forget it.
Since the IF was formed, the strategos of the military forces had always been a Jew. There was a myth that Jewish generals didn't lose wars, and so far it was still true. It made any Jew in the battle school dream of being strategos, and conferred prestige on him from the start. It also caused resentment. Rat Army was often called the Kike Force, half in praise, half in parody of Mazer Rackham's Strike Force. There were many who liked to remember that during the Second Invasion, even though an American Jew as president was hegemon of the Alliance, an Israeli Jew was strategos in overall command of IF defense, and a Russian Jew was Polemarch of the fleet, it was Mazer Rackham, a little-known, twice court-martialed half-Maori New Zealander, whose strike force broke up and finally destroyed the Bugger fleet in the action around Saturn. If Mazer Rackham could save the world, then it didn't matter a bit whether you were a Jew or not, people said. But it did matter. And Rose the Nose knew it. He mocked himself to forestall the mocking comments of anti-Semites. Almost everyone he defeated in battle became, at least for a time, a Jew-hater. But he also made sure everyone knew what he was. His army was in second place, bucking for first.
I took you on, Goy, because I didn't want people to think I only win because I got great soldiers. I want them to know that even with a little puke of a soldier like you, I can still win. We only got 3 rules here.
Do what I tell you, and don't piss in the bed. Ender nodded. He knew that Rose wanted him to ask what the third rule was. So he did. That was three rules. We don't do too good in math here. The message was clear. Winning is more important than anything. Your practice sessions with half-assed little launchies are over, Wigan. Done. You're in the big boy's army now. I'm putting you in Dink Mika's tune. From now on, as far as you're concerned, Dink Mika is God. Then who are you? The personnel officer who hired God, Rose grinned. And you are forbidden to use your desk again until you've frozen two enemy soldiers in the same battle. This order is out of self-defense. I hear you're a genius programmer. I don't want you screwing around with my desk. Everybody erupted in laughter. It took Ender a moment to understand why. Rose had programmed his desk to display and animate a bigger-than-life-size picture of male genitals, which waggled back and forth as Rose held the desk on his naked lap. This is just the sort of Commander Bonzo would trade me to, thought Ender. How does a boy who spends his time like this win battles? Ender found Dink Meeker in the game room, not playing, just sitting and watching. A guy pointed you out, Ender said. I'm Ender Wigan. I know, said Meeker. I'm in your tune. I know, he said again. I'm pretty inexperienced. Dink looked up at him. Look, Wigan, I know all this. Why do you think I asked Rose to get you for me? He had not been dumped. He had been picked up. He had been asked for. Meeker wanted him. Why? Asked Ender. I've watched your practice sessions with the launchies. I think you show some promise. Bonzo is stupid, and I wanted you to get better training than Petra could give you. All she can do is shoot. I needed to learn that. You still move like you were afraid to wet your pants. So teach me. So learn. I'm not going to quit my free time practice sessions. I don't want you to quit them. Rose the Nose does. Rose the Nose can't stop you. Likewise, he can't stop you from using your desk. So why did he order it? Listen, Ender. Commanders have just as much authority as you let them have. The more you obey them, the more power they have over you. What's to stop them from hurting me? Ender remembered Bonzo's blow. I thought that was why you were taking personal attack classes. You've really been watching me, haven't you? Dink didn't answer. I don't want to get Rose mad at me. I want to be part of the battles now. I'm tired of sitting out till the end. Your standings will go down. This time, Ender didn't answer. Listen, Ender, as long as you're part of my tune, you're part of the battle. Ender soon learned why. Dink trained his tune independently from the rest of Rat Army with discipline and vigor. He never consulted with Rose, and only rarely did the whole army maneuver together. It was as if Rose commanded one army, and Dink commanded a much smaller one that happened to practice in the battle room at the same time. Dink started out the first practice by asking Ender to demonstrate his feet-first attack position. The other boys didn't like it. How can we attack lying on our backs? They asked. To Ender's surprise, Dink didn't correct them, didn't say, you aren't attacking on your back, you're dropping downward toward them. He had seen what Ender was doing, but he had not understood the orientation that it implied. It soon became clear to Ender that even though Dink was very, very good, his persistence in holding on to the corridor gravity orientation instead of thinking of the enemy gate as downward was limiting his thinking. They practiced attacking an enemy-held star. Before trying Ender's feet-first method, they had always gone in standing up, their whole bodies available as a target. Even now, though, they reached the star and then assaulted the enemy from one direction only. Over the top, cried Dink, and over they went. To his credit, he then repeated the exercise, calling, again, upside down. But because of their insistence on a gravity that didn't exist, the boys became awkward when the maneuver was under, as if vertigo seized them. They hated the feet-first attack. Dink insisted that they use it. As a result, they hated Ender. Do we have to learn how to fight from a launchie? One of them muttered, making sure Ender could hear. Yes, answered Dink. They kept working. And they learned it. In practice skirmishes, they began to realize how much harder it was to shoot an enemy who was attacking feet-first. As soon as they were convinced of that, they practiced the maneuver more willingly. That night was the first time Ender had come to one of his launchy practice sessions after a whole afternoon of work. He was tired. "Now you're really in an army," said Alai. "You don't have to keep practicing with us." "From you I can learn things that nobody knows," said Ender. "Dink Meeker is the best. I hear he's your toon leader." "Then let's get busy. I'll teach you what I learned from him today." He put Alai and 24 others through the same exercises that had worn him out all afternoon. But he put new touches on the pattern, made the boys try the maneuvers with one leg frozen, with both legs frozen, or using frozen boys for leverage to change directions. Halfway through the practice, Ender noticed Petra and Dink together standing in the doorway watching. Later, when he looked again, they were gone. "So they're watching me. And what we're doing is known." He did not know whether Dink was his friend. He believed that Petra was, but nothing could be sure. They might be angry that he was doing what only commanders and toon leaders were supposed to do, drilling and training soldiers. They might be offended that a soldier would associate so closely with launchies. It made him uneasy to have older children watching.
"I thought I told you not to use your desk."
Rose the Nose stood by Ender's bunk. Ender did not look up. "I'm completing the trigonometry assignment for tomorrow." Rose bumped his knee into Ender's desk.
"I said not to use it."
Ender set the desk on his bunk and stood up. "I need trigonometry more than I need you." Rose was taller than Ender by at least 40 centimeters, but Ender was not particularly worried. It would not come to physical violence, and if it did, Ender thought he could hold his own. Rose was lazy and didn't know personal combat.
"You're going down in the standings, boy," said Rose.
"I expect to. I was only leading the list because of the stupid way Salamander Army was using me."
"Stupid? Bonzo's strategy won a couple of key games."
"Bonzo's strategy wouldn't win a salad fight. I was violating orders every time I fired my gun." Rose hadn't known that. It made him angry.
"So everything Bonzo said about you was a lie. You're not only short and incompetent, you're insubordinate, too."
"But I turned defeat into stalemate all by myself."
"We'll see how you do all by yourself next time."
Rose went away. One of Ender's toon mates shook his head.
"You dumb as a thumb."
Ender looked at Dink, who was doodling on his desk. Dink looked up, noticed Ender watching him, and gazed steadily back at him. No expression, nothing. "Okay," thought Ender, "I can take care of myself." Battle came 2 days later. It was Ender's first time fighting as part of a toon. He was nervous. Dink's toon lined up against the right-hand wall of the corridor, and Ender was very careful not to lean, not to let his weight slip to either side. Stay balanced.
"Wiggin?"
called Rose the Nose. Ender felt dread come over him from throat to groin, a tingle of fear that made him shudder. Rose saw it.
"Shiverin', tremblin', don't wet your pants, little launchy."
Rose hooked a finger over the butt of Ender's gun and pulled him to the force field that hid the battle room from view.
"We'll see how well you do now, Ender. As soon as that door opens, you jump through. Go straight ahead toward the enemy's door."
Suicide. Pointless, meaningless self-destruction. But he had to follow orders now. This was battle, not school. For a moment, Ender raged silently. Then he calmed himself.
"Excellent, sir," he said. "The direction I fire my gun is the direction of their main contingent."
Rose laughed.
"You won't have time to fire anything, pinprick."
The wall vanished. Ender jumped up, took hold of the ceiling handholds, and threw himself out and down, speeding toward the enemy door. It was Centipede Army, and they only began to emerge from their door when Ender was halfway across the battle room. Many of them were able to get under cover of stars quickly, but Ender had doubled up his legs under him, and holding his pistol at his crotch, he was firing between his legs and freezing many of them as they emerged. They flashed his legs, but he had 3 precious seconds before they could hit his body and put him out of action. He froze several more, then flung out his arms in equal and opposite directions. The hand that held his gun ended up pointing toward the main body of Centipede Army. He fired into the mass of the enemy, and then they froze him. A second later, he smashed into the force field of the enemy's door and rebounded with a crazy spin. He landed in a group of enemy soldiers behind a star. They shoved him off and spun him even more rapidly. He rebounded out of control through the rest of the battle, though gradually friction with the air slowed him down. He had no way of knowing how many men he had frozen before getting iced himself, but he did get the general idea that Rat Army won again, as usual. After the battle, Rose didn't speak to him. Ender was still first in the standings, since he had frozen 3, disabled 2, and damaged 7. There was no more talk about insubordination and whether Ender could use his desk. Rose stayed in his part of the barracks and left Ender alone. Dink Meeker began to practice instant emergence from the corridor. Ender's attack on the enemy while they were still coming out of the door had been devastating. If one man can do that much damage, think what a toon can do. Dink got Major Anderson to open a door in the middle of a wall, even during practice sessions, instead of just the floor-level door, so they could practice launching under battle conditions. Word got around. From now on, no one could take 5 or 10 or 15 seconds in the corridor to size things up. The game had changed. More battles. This time, Ender played a proper role within a toon. He made mistakes. Skirmishes were lost. He dropped from 1st to 2nd in the standings, then to 4th. Then he made fewer mistakes and began to feel comfortable within the framework of the toon, and he went back up to 3rd, then 2nd, then 1st. After practice one afternoon, Ender stayed in the battle room. He had noticed that Dink Meeker usually came late to dinner, and he assumed it was for extra practice. Ender wasn't very hungry, and he wanted to see what it was Dink practiced when no one else could see. But Dink didn't practice. He stood near the door watching Ender. Ender stood across the room, watching Dink. Neither spoke. It was plain Dink expected Ender to leave. It was just as plain that Ender was saying no. Dink turned his back on Ender, methodically took off his flash suit, and gently pushed off from the floor. He drifted slowly toward the center of the room, very slowly, his body relaxing almost completely so that his hands and arms seemed to be caught by almost non-existent air currents in the room. After the speed and tension of practice, the exhaustion, the alertness, it was restful just to watch him drift. He did it for 10 minutes or so before he reached another wall. Then he pushed off rather sharply, returned to his flash suit, and pulled it on. "Come on," he said to Ender. They went to the barracks. The room was empty, since all the boys were at dinner. Each went to his own bunk and changed into regular uniforms. Ender walked to Dink's bunk and waited for a moment till Dink was ready to go. "Why did you wait?" asked Dink. "Wasn't hungry." "Well, now you know why I'm not a commander." Ender had wondered. "Actually, they promoted me twice, and I refused." "Refused?" "The second time, they took away my old locker and bunk and desk, assigned me to a commander's cabin, and gave me an army, but I just stayed in the cabin until they gave in and put me back into somebody else's army."
"Why?"
"Because I won't let them do it to me." "I can't believe you haven't seen through all this crap yet, Ender, but I guess you're young. These other armies, they aren't the enemy. It's the teachers. They're the enemy. They get us to fight each other, to hate each other. The game is everything. Win, win, win. It amounts to nothing. We kill ourselves, go crazy trying to beat each other, and all the time the old bastards are watching us, studying us, discovering our weak points, deciding whether we're good enough or not. Well, good enough for what? I was 6 years old when they brought me here. What the hell did I know? They decided I was right for the program, but nobody ever asked me if the program was right for me.
So why don't you go home?"
Dink smiled crookedly. "Because I can't give up the game." He tugged at the fabric of his flash suit, which lay on the bunk beside him. "Because I love this."
"So why not be a commander?"
Dink shook his head.
"Never.
Look what it does to Rosen. The boy's crazy. Rose the nose. Sleeps in here with us instead of in his cabin.
Why?"
"Because he's scared to be alone, Ender. Scared of the dark."
"Rose?"
"But they made him a commander, and so he has to act like one."
"He doesn't know what he's doing. He's winning, but that scares him worst of all, because he doesn't know why he's winning, except that I have something to do with it. Any minute, somebody could find out that Rosen isn't some magic Israeli general who can win no matter what. He doesn't know why anybody wins or loses. Nobody does." It doesn't mean he's crazy, Dink.
I know. You've been here a year. You think these people are normal. Well, they're not. We're not. I look in the library. I call up books on my desk, old ones, because they won't let us have anything new. But I've got a pretty good idea what children are. And we're not children. Children can lose sometimes and nobody cares. Children aren't in armies. They aren't commanders, and they don't rule over 40 other kids. It's more than anybody can take and not get crazy.
Ender tried to remember what other children were like in his class at school back in the city. But all he could think of was Stilson.
I had a brother, just a normal guy. All he cared about was girls and flying. He wanted to fly. He used to play ball with the guys. A pickup game. Shooting balls at a hoop, dribbling down the corridors until the peace officers confiscated your ball. We had a great time. He was teaching me how to dribble when I was taken.
Ender remembered his own brother, and the memory was not fond.
Dink misunderstood the expression on Ender's face.
Hey, I know, nobody's supposed to talk about home, but we came from somewhere. The battle school didn't create us, you know. The battle school doesn't create anything, it just destroys. And we all remember things from home, maybe not good things, but we remember and then we lie and pretend that...
Look, Ender, why is it that nobody talks about home ever?
Doesn't that tell you how important it is? That nobody even admits that...
Oh, hell.
No, it's all right, Ender said. I was just thinking about Valentine, my sister. I wasn't trying to make you upset. It's okay. I don't think of her very much because I always get like this.
That's right. We never cry. I never thought of that. Nobody ever cries. We really are trying to be adults, just like our fathers. I bet your father was like you. I bet he was quiet and took it and then busted out, and I'm not like my father.
So maybe I'm wrong. But look at Bonzo, your old commander. He's got an advanced case of Spanish honor. He can't allow himself to have weaknesses. To be better than him, that's an insult. To be stronger, that's like cutting off his balls. That's why he hates you, because you didn't suffer when he tried to punish you. He hates you for that. He honestly wants to kill you. He's crazy. They're all crazy.
And you aren't?
I be crazy too, little buddy.
But at least when I be craziest, I be floating all alone in space, and the crazy she float out of me, she soak into the walls, and she don't come out till there be battles, and little boys bump into the walls and squish out the crazy.
Ender smiled.
And you be crazy too, said Dink.
Come on, let's go eat. Maybe you can be a commander and not be crazy. Maybe knowing about craziness means you don't have to fall for it.
I'm not going to let the bastards run me, Ender. They've got you pegged, too, and they don't plan to treat you kindly. Look what they've done to you so far.
They haven't done anything except promote me.
And she make you life so easy, ne?
Ender laughed and shook his head. So maybe you're right. They think they got you on ice. Don't let them. But that's what I came for, Ender said. For them to make me into a tool to save the world.
I can't believe you still believe it.
Believe what?
The bugger menace? Save the world? Listen, Ender, if the buggers were coming back to get us, they'd be here. They aren't invading again. We beat them and they're gone.
But the videos, all from the first and second invasions.
Your grandparents weren't born yet when Mazer Rackham wiped them out. You watch, it's all a fake. There is no war, and they're just screwing around with us.
But why?
Because as long as people are afraid of the buggers, the IF can stay in power. And as long as the IF is in power, certain countries can keep their hegemony. But keep watching the vids, Ender. People will catch on to this game pretty soon, and there will be a civil war to end all wars. That's the menace, Ender, not the buggers. And in that war, when it comes, you and I won't be friends, because you're American, just like our dear teachers, and I am not.
They went to the mess hall and ate, talking about other things. But Ender could not stop thinking about what Dink had said. The battle school was so enclosed, the game so important in the minds of the children, that Ender had forgotten there was a world outside. Spanish honor, civil war, politics.
The battle school was really a very small place, wasn't it? But Ender did not reach Dink's conclusions. The buggers were real. The threat was real. The IF controlled a lot of things, but it didn't control the videos and the nets. Not where Ender had grown up. In Dink's home in the Netherlands, with three generations under Russian hegemony, perhaps it was all controlled. But Ender knew that lies could not last long in America, so he believed. Believed. But the seed of doubt was there, and it stayed. And every now and then sent out a little root. It changed everything to have that seed growing. It made Ender listen more carefully to what people meant instead of what they said. It made him wise. There weren't as many boys at the evening practice, not by half. "Where's Bernard?" asked Ender. Ali grinned. Shen closed his eyes and assumed a look of blissful meditation. "Haven't you heard?" said another boy, a launchee from a younger group. "Word's out that any launchee who comes to your practice sessions won't ever amount to anything in anybody's army. Word's out that the commanders don't want any soldiers who've been damaged by your training." Ender nodded. "But the way I brain it," said the launchee, "I be the best soldier I can, and any commander worth a damn, he'd take me, ne?" "Eh," said Ender, with finality. They went on with practice. About a half hour into it, when they were practicing throwing off collisions with frozen soldiers, several commanders in different uniforms came in. They ostentatiously took down names. "Hey," shouted Ali, "make sure you spell my name right." The next night, there were even fewer boys. Now Ender was hearing the stories. Little launchies getting slapped around in the bathrooms, or having accidents in the mess hall and the game room, or getting their files trashed by older boys who had broken the primitive security system that guarded the launchies' desks. "No practice tonight," Ender said. "The hell there's not," said Ali. "Give it a few days. I don't want any of the little kids getting hurt. If you stop, even one night, they'll figure it works to do this kind of thing, just like if you'd ever back down to Bernard back when he was being a swine." "Besides," said Shen, "we aren't scared and we don't care, so you owe it to us to go on. We need the practice and so do you." Ender remembered what Dink had said. The game was trivial compared to the whole world. Why should anyone give every night of his life to this stupid, stupid game? "We don't accomplish that much anyway," Ender said. He started to leave. Ali stopped him. "They scare you too? They slap you up in the bathroom? Stick your head in the pissa? Somebody gots a gun up you bung?" "No," Ender said. "You still my friend?" asked Ali, more quietly. "Yes." "Then I still you friend, Ender, and I stay here and practice with you." The older boys came again, but fewer of them were commanders. Most were members of a couple of armies. Ender recognized salamander uniforms, even a couple of rats. They didn't take names this time. Instead, they mocked and shouted and ridiculed as the launchees tried to master difficult skills with untrained muscles. It began to get to a few of the boys. "Listen to them," Ender said to the other boys. "Remember the words. If you ever want to make your enemy crazy, shout that kind of stuff at them. It makes them do dumb things to be mad. But we don't get mad." Shen took the idea to heart, and after each jibe from the older boys, he had a group of four launchees recite the words loudly 5 or 6 times. When they started singing the taunts like nursery rhymes, some of the older boys launched themselves from the wall and came out for a fight. The flash suits were designed for wars fought with harmless light. They offered little protection and seriously hampered movement if it came to hand-to-hand fighting in Nullo. Half of the boys were flashed anyway and couldn't fight, but the stiffness of their suits made them potentially useful. Ender quickly ordered his launchees to gather in one corner of the room. The older boys laughed at them even more, and some who had waited by the wall came forward to join in the attack, seeing Ender's group in retreat. Ender and Ali decided to throw a frozen soldier in the face of an enemy. The frozen launchee struck helmet first, and the two caromed off each other. The older boy clutched his chest where the helmet had hit him and screamed in pain. The mockery was over. The rest of the older boys launched themselves to enter the battle. Ender didn't really have much hope of any of the boys getting away without some injury. But the enemy was coming haphazardly, uncoordinatedly. They had never worked together before, while Ender's little practice army, though there were only a dozen of them now, knew each other well and knew how to work together.
Go Nova, shouted Ender. The other boys laughed. They gathered into three groups, feet together, squatting, holding hands so they formed small stars against the back wall. We'll go around them and make for the door, now. At his signal, the three stars burst apart, each boy launching in a different direction, but angled so he could rebound off a wall and head for the door. Since all of the enemy were in the middle of the room, where course changes were far more difficult, it was an easy maneuver to carry out. Ender had positioned himself so that when he launched, he would rendezvous with the frozen soldier he had just used as a missile. The boy wasn't frozen now, and he let Ender catch him, whirl him around, and send him toward the door. Unfortunately, the necessary result of the action was for Ender to head in the opposite direction and at a reduced speed. Alone of all his soldiers, he was drifting fairly slowly, and at the end of the battle room where the older boys were gathered. He shifted himself so he could see that all his soldiers were safely gathered at the far wall. In the meantime, the furious and disorganized army had just spotted him. Ender calculated how soon he would reach the wall so he could launch again, not soon enough. Several enemies had already rebounded toward him. Ender was startled to see Stilson's face among them. Then he shuddered and realized he had been wrong. Still, it was the same situation, and this time they wouldn't sit still for a single combat settlement. There was no leader, as far as Ender knew, and these boys were a lot bigger than him. Still, he had learned some things about weight shifting in personal combat class and about the physics of moving objects. Game battles almost never got to hand-to-hand combat. You never bumped into an enemy that wasn't frozen unless you were frozen yourself. So, in the few seconds he had, Ender tried to position himself to receive his guests. Fortunately, they knew as little about Nullo fighting as he did, and the few who tried to punch him found that throwing a punch was pretty ineffective when their bodies moved backward just as quickly as their fists moved forward. But there were some in the group who had bone-breaking on their minds, as Ender quickly saw. He didn't plan to be there for it, though. He caught one of the punchers by the arm and threw him as hard as he could. It hurled Ender out of the way of the rest of the first onslaught, though he still wasn't getting any closer to the door. Stay there, he shouted at his friends, who obviously were forming up to come and rescue him. Just stay there. Someone caught Ender by the foot. The tight grip gave Ender some leverage. He was able to stamp firmly on the other boy's ear and shoulder, making him cry out and let go. If the boy had let go just as Ender kicked downward, it would have hurt him much less and allowed Ender to use the maneuver as a launch. Instead, the boy had hung on too well. His ear was torn and scattering blood in the air, and Ender was drifting even more slowly. I'm doing it again, thought Ender. I'm hurting people again just to save myself. Why don't they leave me alone so I don't have to hurt them? Three more boys were converging on him now, and this time they were acting together. Still, they had to grab him before they could hurt him. Ender positioned himself quickly so that two of them would take his feet, leaving his hands free to deal with the third. Sure enough, they took the bait. Ender grasped the shoulders of the third boy's shirt and pulled him up sharply, butting him in the face with his helmet. Again a scream and a shower of blood. The two boys who had his legs were wrenching at them, twisting him. Ender threw the boy with the bleeding nose at one of them. They entangled, and Ender's leg came free. It was a simple matter then to use the other boy's hold for leverage, to kick him firmly in the groin, then shove off him in the direction of the door. He didn't get that good a launch, so that his speed was nothing special, but it didn't matter. No one was following him. He got to his friends at the door. They caught him and handed him along to the door. They were laughing and slapping him playfully. You bad, they say. You scary. You flame. Practice is over for the day, Ender said. They'll be back tomorrow, said Shen. Won't do them any good, said Ender. If they come without suits, we'll do this again. If they come with suits, we can flash them. Besides, said Alai, the teachers won't let it happen. Ender remembered what Dink had told him and wondered if Alai was right. Hey, Ender, shouted one of the older boys as Ender left the battle room. You nothing, man. You be nothing. My old commander, Bonzo, said Ender. I think he doesn't like me. Ender checked the rosters on his desk that night. Four boys turned up on the medical report, one with bruised ribs, one with a bruised testicle, one with a torn ear, and one with a broken nose and a loose tooth. The cause of injury was the same in all cases. Accidental collision in Null G.
If the teachers were allowing that to turn up on the official report, it was obvious they didn't intend to punish anyone for the nasty little skirmish in the battle room. Aren't they going to do anything? Don't they care what goes on in this school? Since he was back to the barracks earlier than usual, Ender called up the fantasy game on his desk. It had been a while since he last used it, long enough that it didn't start where he had left off. Instead, he began by the giant's corpse. Only now it was hardly identifiable as a corpse at all, unless you stood off a ways and studied it. The body had eroded into a hill entwined with grass and vines. Only the crest of the giant's face was still visible, and it was white bone like limestone protruding from a discouraged, withering mountain. Ender did not look forward to fighting with the wolf children again, but to his surprise, they weren't there. Perhaps killed once, they were gone forever. It made him a little sad. He made his way down underground, through the tunnels, to the cliff ledge overlooking the beautiful forest. Again, he threw himself down. And again a cloud caught him and carried him into the castle turret room. The snake began to unweave itself from the rug again, only this time Ender did not hesitate. He stepped on the head of the snake and crushed it under his foot. It writhed and twisted under him, and in response he twisted and ground it deeper into the stone floor. Finally, it was still. Ender picked it up and shook it until it unwove itself and the pattern in the rug was gone. Then, still dragging the snake behind him, he began to look for a way out. Instead, he found a mirror. And in the mirror, he saw a face that he easily recognized. It was Peter, with blood dripping down his chin and a snake's tail protruding from a corner of his mouth. Ender shouted and thrust his desk from him. The few boys in the barracks were alarmed at the noise, but he apologized and told them it was nothing. They went away. He looked again into his desk. His figure was still there, staring into the mirror. He tried to pick up some of the furniture to break the mirror, but it could not be moved. The mirror would not come off the wall either. Finally, Ender threw the snake at it. The mirror shattered, leaving a hole in the wall behind it. Out of the hole came dozens of tiny snakes, which quickly bit Ender's figure again and again. Tearing the snakes frantically from itself, the figure collapsed and died in a writhing heap of small serpents. The screen went blank, and words appeared. "Play again?" Ender signed off and put the desk away. The next day, several commanders came to Ender or sent soldiers to tell him not to worry. Most of them thought the extra practice sessions were a good idea, he should keep it up. And to make sure nobody bothered him, they were sending a few of their older soldiers who needed extra practice to come join him. "They're as big as most of the buggers who attacked you last night. They'll think twice." Instead of a dozen boys, there were 45 that night, more than an army. And whether it was because of the presence of older boys on Ender's side, or because they had had enough the night before, none of their enemies came. Ender didn't go back to the fantasy game, but it lived in his dreams. He kept remembering how it felt to kill the snake, grinding it in, the way he tore the ear off that boy, the way he destroyed Stilson, the way he broke Bernard's arm. And then to stand up, holding the corpse of his enemy, and find Peter's face looking out at him from the mirror. "This game knows too much about me. This game tells filthy lies. I am not Peter. I don't have murder in my heart." And then a worse fear, that he was a killer, only better at it than Peter ever was, that it was this very trait that pleased the teachers. It's killers they need for the bugger wars. It's people who can grind the enemy's face into the dust and spatter their blood all over space. Well, I'm your man. I'm the bloody bastard you wanted when you had me spawned. I'm your tool. And what difference does it make if I hate the part of me that you most need? What difference does it make that when the little serpents killed me in the game, I agreed with them and was glad?
"I didn't call you in here to waste time. How in hell did the computer do that?"
"I don't know."
"How could it pick up a picture of Ender's brother and put it into the graphics in this fairyland routine?"
"Chronograph. I wasn't there when it was programmed. All I know is that the computer has never taken anyone to this place before. Fairyland was strange enough, but this isn't Fairyland anymore. It's beyond the end of the world, and...
I know the names of the places. I just don't know what they mean.
Fairyland was programmed in. It's mentioned in a few other places. But nothing talks about the end of the world. We don't have any experience with it.
I don't like having the computer screw around with Ender's mind that way. Peter Wiggin is the most potent person in his life, except maybe his sister, Valentine.
And the mind game is designed to help shape them. Help them. Find worlds they can be comfortable in.
You don't get it, do you, Major Imbu? I don't want Ender being comfortable with the end of the world. Our business here is not to be comfortable with the end of the world.
The end of the world in the game isn't necessarily the end of humanity in the Bugger Wars. It has a private meaning to Ender.
Good. What meaning?
I don't know, sir. I'm not the kid. Ask him.
Major Imbu, I'm asking you.
There could be a thousand meanings.
Try one.
You've been isolating the boy. Maybe he's wishing for the end of this world, the battle school. Or maybe it's about the end of the world he grew up with as a little boy. His home, coming here. Or maybe it's his way of coping with having broken up so many other kids here. Ender's a sensitive kid, you know. And he's done some pretty bad things to people's bodies. He might be wishing for the end of that world.
Or none of the above.
The mind game is a relationship between the child and the computer. Together, they create stories. The stories are true, in the sense that they reflect the reality of the child's life. That's all I know.
And I'll tell you what I know, Major Imbu. That picture of Peter Wiggin was not one that could have been taken from our files here at the school. We have nothing on him, electronically or otherwise, since Ender came here. And that picture is more recent.
It's only been a year and a half, sir. How much can the boy change?
He's wearing his hair completely differently now. His mouth was redone with orthodontia. I got a recent photograph from Landside and compared. The only way the computer here in the battle school could have gotten that picture was by requisitioning it from a Landside computer, and not even one connected with the IF. That takes requisitionary powers. We can't just go into Guilford County, North Carolina, and pluck a picture out of school files. Did anyone at this school authorize getting this?
You don't understand, sir. Our battle school computer is only a part of the IF network. If we want a picture, we have to get a requisition. But if the mind game program determines that the picture is necessary,
it can just go take it.
Not just every day. Only when it's for the child's own good.
Okay, it's for his good. But why? His brother is dangerous. His brother was rejected for this program because he's one of the most ruthless and unreliable human beings we've laid hands on. Why is he so important to Ender? Why, after all this time?
Honestly, sir, I don't know. And the mind game program is designed so that it can't tell us. It may not know itself, actually. This is uncharted territory.
You mean the computer's making this up as it goes along?
You might put it that way.
Well, that does make me feel a little better. I thought I was the only one.